Next up is Bread and Butter, a culinary chronicle with Lael Gilbert.
I want to tackle a topic I've been pondering for a while, but frankly haven't yet dared to address: cultural appropriation as it applies to food and eating. I'm hesitant about this because, one, cultural appropriation is a tetchy term. Two, because I'm part of the dominant culture here, I don't want to come across as preachy about something that I'm really just trying to understand myself. And three, I really don't want to assign guilt to some of my favorite food experiences. But this is an important topic. Writer and foodie Rachel Kuo writes that cultural appropriation is when members of a dominant culture, the people with the power, adopt parts of another culture in a way that takes it out of context, oversimplifies it, or is coercive. This is different from cultural appreciation, which certainly exists, and the nuance can be a bit hard to define. Eating recipes and ingredients from other cultures is a powerful tool to open doors, a good way to start conversations and share some of the most interesting everyday experiences from a different way of living. But when the dominant group reduces another culture to just a cuisine, boils down complex and difficult histories into menu items, that's where it gets problematic. Think of it this way. If you happen to be a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, how did you feel when Book of Mormon the musical came on the scene? To me, it felt weird. It seemed like an attempt to condense my entire religious experience, the complexity of my community, into a 3-hour musical comedy. What if people who left that theater thought they understood the Mormon experience? Now, imagine that people think that they could understand your history, opinions, politics, conflicts, culture, and passions because they ate funeral potatoes and fry sauce. Imagine that they associate your most sacred experiences, all the people you love, and your most painful memories with green jello. While food can connect people and serve as a way to learn about experiences outside our own, it is problematic if food is your only identifier for a culture. There's a loss of complexity if Japan is reduced to ramen and sushi, Mexico to tacos and burritos, or India to curry. What do you know about the cuisine of Cambodia? If it's just dog, ask yourself why. In that entire richly historied country, why do we hold on to one narrative, whether or not it is true? Our perceptions of foods that are authentic stem from simplistic ideas about what a certain country represents to us, not what it actually is. For example, what is now Vietnam was occupied by China for 1,000 years and then painfully colonized by France. This period of colonization led to things like banh mi sandwiches, currently popular across the U.S. This doesn't mean that you have to stop eating banh mi, but knowing the context matters. People from different cultures have their own food preferences too, unique ways their family makes something, or variations in the way they prepare their own food. When you ask for authentic ethnic cuisine, it's like asking for the most authentic way to eat a hamburger. It just doesn't exist, except in our own minds. By asking another culture to conform to what we believe about them never feels good. When food gets disconnected from communities, people can start forgetting or ignoring challenges faced by those communities. We might love Mexican food, but not care about issues such as labor equity and immigration policy. We're borrowing the pieces of a culture that are most easily digestible to us and ignoring the rest. There are strong relationships between food, people, and power. The best way I am finding to avoid future missteps with cultural appropriation is to be humble, curious, and willing to change. So keep frequenting your favorite falafel or pad thai places, but show that you really value this cuisine and the people who bring it to you by digging a little deeper. This is Lael Gilbert for Bread and Butter.